starts in verse 11. A strong emphasis is placed on where he got the gospel that he preached. Let's read 11 through 24. It says, "But I make known to you, brethren, that the gospel which was preached by me is not according to man. For I neither received it from man, nor was I taught it, but it came through the revelation of Jesus Christ." That's where Paul got his. Completely different from any other man. And we've studied lately in Donnie's class, made a really good point that, you know, no, that don't happen to everybody. You know, this is an exception here. But verse 13, "For you have heard of my former conduct in Judaism, how I persecuted the church of God beyond measure and tried to destroy it, and I advanced in Judaism beyond many of my contemporaries in my own nation, being more exceedingly zealous for the traditions of my father. But when it pleased God, who separated me from my mother's womb and called me through His grace, to reveal His Son in me, that I might preach Him among the Gentiles, I did not immediately confer with flesh and blood. Nor did I go up to Jerusalem to those who were apostles before me. But I went to Arabia and returned again to Damascus. Then after 3 years, I went up to Jerusalem to see Peter and remained with him 15 days. But I saw none of the other Gospels except James, the Lord's brother. Now concerning the things which I write to you, indeed, before God, I do not lie. Afterward, I went into the regions of Syria and Cilicia, and I was unknown by face to the churches of Judea which were in Christ. But they were hearing only. He formerly persecuted us, now preaches the faith which he once tried to destroy. And they glorified God in me." That finishes up our first chapter there, but an introduction to this. 11 through 12 there, he makes some comments that we could look at closer. You all have some different versions. It says, "But I make known to you," verse 11 starts out. I think the King James says, "I certify." Is that right? I certify. Okay, I certify, or New King James, "but I made known." What he's doing there is he's declaring the credibility. He's declaring the credibility of the gospel that he preached. And he brought up the fact that this is not from man, because he didn't receive it from man. It's not his. It's not after fashion of men, but or human origin. He also made mention, "not received or taught by men." Neither received it from man, nor was I taught it. I think the King James Version says, "not received or taught by man." Came by revelation of Jesus Christ. And that's why he's telling them, he's defending his apostleship and giving them where he received his knowledge. It's a divine origin, and it's revealed by Jesus Christ himself. So, yes, he's an apostle. He's taught by Christ. Did he walk with Christ on earth? No. But he was divinely taught by Jesus Christ. He has to now, he gets ready to give the evidence that supports his claim after that. If we look at 13 and 14, "For if you've heard my former conduct in Judaism, how I persecuted the church of God beyond measure and I tried to destroy it, and I advanced in Judaism beyond many of my contemporaries in my own nation, being more exceedingly zealous for the traditions of my father." We see there, he mentions that they had heard of his former conduct. I think that's one of those things that I don't know exactly how they heard. We're not told. I think we can all have some ideas of maybe how they heard or whatever. Paul could have told them. Judaizers could have told them. Because remember, they're the ones that are following him around, trying to tear down everything he builds up, destroy him. Yep.
And you get persecuted the church, and then he comes right along and like, okay, I'm giving you some information. You need to,
yep.
This is from God. I mean, it might be a little bit hard to swallow.
Yep. Yep. Some of them were very, very leery of him, and it took Barnabas and some of them to really vouch for him and for his faith to help him get a toehold or a start on that. Mentioned how he was so wrapped up in the Jewish religion. He was a very zealous Jew, and you can tell by his actions that he was he had aspirations in mind to succeed and to grow in the Jewish faith. And the reason that I say that is because you see, I think it's Acts 5, we see Gamaliel, the great teacher. He sat under and was taught by him. So you see that he's not just your regular Jew that would come up from anywhere. He was schooled under Gamaliel. He was rising in the ranks. He was actively persecuting the church. He was definitely, well, as it says, advanced beyond many of his contemporaries. He was setting the pace to get ahead of all in, when it came to that. Let's see. I've got a note here. Sometimes I can't read my own notes. I know Acts, he mentions in Acts 22:3, I'm indeed a Jew, born in Tarsus of Cilicia, but brought up in this city at the feet of Gamaliel, taught according to the strictness of our father's law, and was zealous toward God, as you all are today. That's Acts 22:3. And to find that in context, we were back there just a while ago in Acts 5. You might remember Gamaliel. He comes up again in Acts 5 when the apostles, Peter and the apostles, had just made that comment when they had the stage and were able to talk to them. Gamaliel was one of them that were there with them on trial. And verse 33 of Acts 5, after Peter said we ought to obey God rather than men that we just read a while ago, you see this festers the situation or makes it even more tense. He says in verse 33, when they had heard this, they were furious and plotted to kill them. Then one in the council stood up, a Pharisee named Gamaliel, a teacher of the law, held in respect by all the people, and commanded them to put the apostles outside for a little while. That's Paul's teacher. That's who he studied under. He was a leader. He was an influencer. He was setting in judgment here of the ones that he had before him. And I remember him most because the advice that he gives when they're wanting to kill these men. And he tells them in verse 35, and I said to them, take heed to yourselves what you intend to do regarding these men, Gamaliel says. And he says, for some time ago, Thaddeus rose up claiming to be somebody. A number of men, about 400, joined him. He was slain. All who obeyed him were scattered and came to nothing. After this man, Judas of Galilee rose up in the days of the census and drew away many people after him. He also perished, and all who obeyed him were dispersed. And now I say to you, keep away from these men. This is Gamaliel speaking against those that were wanting to kill him. For if this plan or this work is of men, it will come of nothing. But if it is of God, you cannot overthrow it, lest you even be found to fight against God. He had the best advice. And it plays right in, you know, in some respects to what we were talking about. God or men? Who are we going to please, God or men? And Gamaliel makes their own point that they just made before them. If this is of God, there's nothing we can do about it. Are we going to fight against God? If it's not, they'll fade away like everybody else did. So that was Paul's teacher. I mean, he was destined to be great in the faith. He was zealous in the things he believed. He upheld the traditions of the Father. He proved it by his savage persecution of the church. He talked about some of the phrases that he used. He mentioned beyond measure, which is more than can be measured. So he persecuted them beyond measure or unmercifully. I don't know. I think the King James Version uses in verse 14, wasted the church, or I think that's what the King James Version uses.
It says wasted it in verse 13. Mark.
Okay. Wasted, made havoc of it, tried to destroy it, persecuted it. This persecution. Here's Paul. Here's one thing that came to my mind. Here's Paul. It's not been that long, since Stephen. In Acts 8, we see that Paul was complicit in Stephen's death, his stoning. Stephen made a great stand. In Acts 8, 1 through 4, it says that Saul was consenting to his death, being Stephen. And at that time, a great persecution arose against the church was at Jerusalem, and they were scattered throughout the regions of Judea and Samaria except for the apostles. We see that, and we've read that a million times, and we think that's horrible. But what was that doing? That was dispersing the gospel. That was dispersing the word. It's actually accomplishing what they didn't want to happen. They're trying to quieten the word. And the more that they persecute and scatter, the more the word goes out. I'm often reminded of how many times we see things that that we think are horrible. Nothing good can come from that. But God, in His time, we see later on things, good things can come from these things. God being all-knowing, He works all these things out. tried to stamp it out of existence. Paul did, it said. Acts 9, verses 1 through 2. Saul, still breathing threats and murder against the disciples of the Lord, went to the high priest and asked letters from him to the synagogues of Damascus, so that if he found any who were of the way, whether men or women, he might bring them bound to Jerusalem. Funny thing, he had letters headed to Damascus when he was converted, and he ends up back in Damascus after he's converted and spends the time there after he comes out of Arabia. So we see Paul is like many that we see today in the world. We know this because we talk to people. We see others that are in the denominational world. They're as committed to their doctrine as anybody. They really are. That's why it's so hard to sway them. It's so hard to win them over. So hard to convert them. Because they're just like Paul. They're just as zealous in their form of doctrine as they can be. Paul, here he was, thoroughly convinced of his former beliefs when he was in Judaism at that time. I have a couple of things that I just thought of. You all probably have some more. How hard it is to stop doing something you've done for a long time. It's hard to do, isn't it? When we get into habits, when we get into doing things for a long time, the longer we do something, the harder it is to quit it. And I got to thinking about Paul and about these Jews, why they were so easily drawn back into Judaism. You got to think about this. Moses was like 1,500 years before Christ. I mean, Judaism comes along. David was 1,000 years before. I mean, they have seen this old law, and they've been in this for hundreds of years. And now, all of a sudden, the world's being turned upside down. I'm sure old habits are hard to break, especially when they're founded that deep. I know if you go to verse... Anybody got anything they want to say about those verses? We still see that faith today, don't we? Still have Jews today, those who refuse to accept Christ as the Messiah. So it's still around today, even today, and it's add another 2,000 years on to that, and it's hard to turn people like that. Look at verses 15 and 17. Let's try to get through those. But when it pleased God who separated me from my mother's womb and called me through His grace to reveal His Son in me, that I might preach Him among the Gentiles, I did not immediately confer with flesh and blood, nor did I go up to Jerusalem to those who were apostles before me, but I went to Arabia and returned to Damascus. We're going to have to leave off here, but when we start these two verses here, we're going to notice Paul's dramatic change in his conversion. Paul was like a pendulum, and I've known people like this, we probably all have. They're toggle switches. They're either wide open or they're off. On or off. Paul was that way. And just as far as he swung to Judaism, he swung to the cause of Christ. He was just as zealous and hardworking and committed as he was before. So next week we'll pick up right there at verses 15 through 17 and try to get through. We'll get through the rest of the chapter, I'm sure, next week. We'll try our best. Anybody got anything they want to add or...